You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Everybody, and welcome to the Paranormal Portal Podcast. I'm your host, Brent Thomas. Tonight, we're going to talk about divine interventions, and it's the idea that, people claim that somehow something, someone, something, some being, some force, some energy intervened and protected them or changed the circumstances of their lives or saved them from some certain problem. And they claim this divine providence, this wonderful idea that something was there keeping track of them. Now, I'm not advocating any religion or religious idea, and I never will, because I think that religion is incredibly individual and is subjective to you, whatever that may mean in your life. And even if it means no formal religion, but you've kind of got your own idea of what goes on. I don't think that there's any one person that can say, these are the circumstances, the end. There are certainly those people out there and those organizations out there, and that's fine. I'm not condemning anything nor promoting anything, but what I'm talking about is just the idea that something has stepped in. Something has created change and in a positive, wonderful way. And so we're going to get into these tonight here on our show. First one is, and this one sounds like just good health practice more than divine intervention, but this person says, I had a coworker who was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and they said that she decided that instead of going through chemotherapy, she was going to juice because she didn't want to do the chemo, and who can blame her? My God, that is just a horridly harsh regimen of treatments. But the good news was, is 4 months later, this person was cancer free. And so that to me sounds like a dietary thing. And it just worked out for this person to juice and beat their cancer. But, maybe it is divine intervention. I don't know. And I guess it's not a bad thing if this person believes that it is, because at the end of the day, if you believe that something is helping you, then that's a wonderful place to be. Okay. So the next one is, this one I thought was incredibly interesting. And it could be a medical mistake. It could be. But what if it's not? What if it's better than that? So my grandfather had a heart attack while driving, and he crashed his car into a tree. He was without oxygen to his brain for 25 minutes. The hospital did everything they could to revive him, and actually trying to revive him for over 3 hours because it was a veterans hospital and he was a decorated Green Beret. I was called to the hospital and was informed that he was brain dead. He was without oxygen for far too long. And I absolutely bawled. I cried and felt horrible. And all the while, my family was around his bedside talking to him. The doctors told them that he might be able to hear them, and they were going to take him off of life support that night. But my uncle, coming from San Diego, missed his flight and couldn't come until morning, so they decided to wait. And well, it's a good thing. A few hours later, I was next to my grandpa, and his hands started twitching. I called the nurse in, and she told us that these were just spasms, and that it was normal. The twitches kept getting more and more frequent and severe. And after a while, the doctors started to get a little concerned. They checked his vitals, and they seemed absolutely surprised and shocked. After a while, he opened his eyes. We were all in shock. Complete disbelief. They told us he was brain dead and we were going to take him off of life support. He couldn't talk for hours, but asked for a pen and notepad to write something. The first thing he wrote was, was Energizer, and then the second thing he wrote was Bunny. It took him about 2 days before he could speak, and now 4 years later, he is fully functioning at 62 years of age. So this was the situation where they were going to pull the plug, and somehow, even though he was brain dead, and I imagine they did EEGs and all of that, he had no brain activity and then somehow came back. So that is marvelous, and that is no small thing. Could it be divine intervention? Yeah, I think it could. All right, the next one is, you hear these kind of stories quite a bit, and could it be just a lapse of perception? Could it be somebody didn't really realize their surroundings because of what was going on? And it's possible. But what if it's not? What if they knew exactly what was going on and still this occurred? So I'm going to read it to you and you guys can, you know, believe what you will. This person was 18 and driving down the freeway towards San Diego. And I was on the far right lane going about 65 miles an hour, and there was an old Asian driver who was going about the same speed as me on the left lane, or the lane to my left, rather. And there was a bunch of other cars around us at steady pace, going all at a steady pace, and he didn't realize I was right next to him and tried to merge into my lane. I absolutely freaked out and swerved to my right to avoid him hitting me, and my car, which was a 1996 Accord, broke out and ended up doing 2 360s through 4 lanes, and I stopped facing the oncoming traffic. There were absolutely no cars around me when it happened, and when I stopped, the cars were a really good distance from me. It was as if something pushed all of them back when my car lost traction. I didn't hit anyone, and after I stopped, I was in total shock and took a second to catch my breath. And then I pulled off over to the side and just started bawling like a baby. So is that a divine intervention? Is that something intervened? Something pushed it away? Something changed those circumstances to avoid a problem or very severe injury or death? Maybe of several people if it would have gone the way it did, but it suddenly there was no cars around when the car lost traction. And that's incredibly powerful. This one I thought was really pretty cool, and I like this one. And I'm going to get into my thoughts about all of these after I finish the last of the stories that I'm going to share with you. I had cancer that was slow to respond even to, apparently it's called Red Devil chemo. The doctor switched me to Ibrance plus a hormonal drug. I took it for 3 months, and the tumor went from being the size of a very large grapefruit to a tumor too small to be measured. The doctors say they never saw anything like it. After 3 months, I needed a refill on the hormonal drug, and I called the oncology nurse, and I gave her the name of the medicine, and she said it was never prescribed for me. The doctor prescribed something else completely. The records indicated the drug I was on was one that no one ever gave me, but it was the combination that tamed that tumor. No one knows where that prescription came from. They were joking that, well, there's a blind study that no one can discuss. So it was incredibly fortuitous. She was, she or he, and I don't know who submitted the story, but it's incredibly powerful that they were prescribed a medication blend, and somehow were given the wrong medication, and instead were given a hormonal drug along with a different one, and that combination defeated that tumor and caused it to reduce to, you know, immeasurable size. How amazing is that? And I don't know if what you guys think of stuff like that, but to me, just look at what was at risk. That person's life was at risk. Their future was at risk. And so somehow this accident happened, or, you know, we'll say accident for the sake of the discussion, but something happened to change the medications this person was given, and that exact blend worked to cause that tumor to be defeated. Anything else would have been ineffective, I would imagine. But for some reason, that blend defeated that tumor. Now, I hope somebody in the medical field was taking notes and going, hey, this is really interesting. It shouldn't have happened, but look what happened when it did. So I don't think there's a better case study for that. But anyway, I digress. Now, this one does have some religious undertones to it, actually some pretty profound religious undertones to it. And again, this isn't me advocating a religion. So, I don't ever mean to offend or to make people believe that this is, you know, some show trying to convert people, because it's not. I just talk about phenomena. And sometimes these phenomena happen within religious communities, and I can't ignore them for the sake of somebody's opinion. So do bear with me, but I think it's a very cool message, regardless of the foundation of it, whether it agrees with you or not. But my dad was in a horrible car accident in 1994 and had to walk with a cane because of several herniated discs. The doctors did back surgery on him and fused part of his spine together with titanium rods, and he was bedridden for a good amount of time. I was really small and believed that Jesus would heal him if we would just go to one of those places that I would see on TV. And in parentheses, they say Benny Hinn Crusades. And my mom heard that a local church was busing people to one of them, and she called and got us seats. We were seated in the nosebleed section, and it came to the part of the night where people started walking on stage and reporting that they were healed. And I looked at my dad and said, "Don't you want to be healed? You should go down there." At that time, my little sister said the same thing to him. She was around 5 years old. My dad gave Mom his cane and wobbled out of the row of seats. There were at least 6 flights of stairs to get to the bottom of the arena. My dad took the first step down without his cane, and I thought he was going to fall down the stairs, and he took the second step, and the next thing I remember, we were racing each other down the stairs to the bottom. When we got to the bottom, a lady grabbed my dad by the shoulder and said, "God told me to wait for you." She took his hand and led us straight to the side of the stage, and one of the ushers started asking him what God had done for him. And he quickly told him what had happened, and the next thing we knew, we're on stage and my dad is running back and forth with no cane, something I hadn't seen my dad do in over 6 years at that time. The rest was just an amazing blur. A long story short, my dad has been walking fine ever since. 16 plus years. He went back to the doctors afterwards and they could not explain what had happened. Even though that happened when I was younger, it's hard not to have doubts as an adult that some people are phonies when it comes to these types of churches, programs. And at least for my dad, the one confirmed case that I know of, it was 100% real. And that is incredibly powerful, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, again, it's not about advocating one religion over another or one set of beliefs over another. I don't pretend to know. I can't know. But I know the truth in my heart. And what that is that I believe that we are divine beings, all of us. And I believe that when we believe something, it becomes powerful. We believe in figures. We believe in philosophies. And when you believe in those things, they become real, and we realize them. And realize is a fantastic word because it's making something real. Now, when you have belief, let's say, for instance, a superstitious person, it seems really ridiculous to say, you know, you shouldn't walk under a ladder. It's like, who the hell cares? As long as you get to where you're going, however you get there shouldn't be important. But a person that believes that walking under a ladder is going to be a problem, after they walk under a ladder, they're going to experience problems. They're going to experience all kinds of events that seem to correlate and reinforce that belief. So it's really a self-limiting philosophy that if you believe something has power over you, it does. And that can be bad and that can be good. You can, but I really believe that you have to give things permission. You have to give a religious person permission to heal you. And you do that by having belief, having faith. But in the end, does that therefore then make us the creator of the miracle itself? And I don't know. I'm just throwing ideas out there. And again, I don't pretend to be able to speak with any authority other than what's in my heart. And I'm just sharing it with you. But I think these are very powerful, and I think they're incredibly incredibly poignant to know that either A, there are these incredible beings that are watching over us and making sure we're okay, and B, if you don't believe in that part, then the empowering thing is that you have the ability to create amazing things if you give yourself permission to. And what is the limit of what you could create? Well, you know, I can't state that. That's up to you to define, but it's just an idea. But I think it's very powerful either way. If you believe that something has that power, then that's a beautiful thing. And I hope it works out for you. And if you believe that you have that power, then that's a beautiful thing. And I hope that works out for you as well. So, I don't know. Just some thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. But I think it's incredibly powerful, and I think there are amazing things all around us, so. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here of the Paranormal Portal Podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal, and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. About angelic stories, and to me these are absolutely wonderful stories. For the most part, they can be a little dark in some cases, but I think it's so powerful to think that somebody's looking out for us, that somebody's there, somebody's holding the net, you know. And it's not for everybody, it's not every time, but in one critical instance in your life, maybe someone will be there to be your angel. The term angel is kind of like demon. You know, demon gets overused a lot. Whenever it talks about a negative spirit, it's a demon, it's a demon, it's a demon. Likewise, any benevolent spirit is always referred to as an angel. Now, by definition, I don't know what is an angel and what isn't. As far as when good things happen, there's the story that we all have angels. Every one of us has an angel. That'd be really cool if that's the case. I hope so. I probably need a handful of them personally because I've kept them pretty busy throughout the course of my life. But You know, just to know that somebody's right there. Now, some people refer to them as spirit guides. And in some of these cases, could they just be benevolent spirits, like trying to help out? And there's tons and tons and tons of those accounts of people saying that a spirit came in and helped them when they most needed it. Now, could some of those have been angels likewise? I don't know. They don't come with badges. They don't come wearing wings and halos as they're traditionally depicted. They appear however they appear. But the point is that they do wonderful things, and so that's why we refer to them as angelic, I guess, is because they help, they protect, they save. And so those are wonderful things. But that's tonight's show, and I'm going to get into these stories right away. So the first one I'm going to read to you is it's not on the light and fluffy side, but I think it's still pretty powerful, and I'm going to read you this and see what you guys think. So he says, let me introduce myself. My name is Thano, and I live in Albania, and I'm in my early teens. I've always had a strong affection for the paranormal and religious stories, so I've been dealing with religious and theological books since I was about 4 or 5. My grandparents were very religious and taught me to be a good person and sincere and righteous with everybody I run into, and when I was a child, I suppose I was about 2 years old, my grandmother was diagnosed with liver cancer. The doctors couldn't do anything about it, just an experimental procedure to implant an artificial item that would assist the rest of her liver that was remaining. And my grandmother came over to Greece, the place where I lived until I was 5, and decided to have the surgery there. One day before the surgery, my father saw a vision. It wasn't a dream, it was a vision. My father just got home late from work and went to bed. I was sleeping in my little bed and my mother was watching TV. My father took a shower, drank a glass of milk, and went to bed. My parents turned off the TV and they both fell asleep. And after several hours, at around 4 a.m., my dad suddenly woke up. He heard a strong noise, a loud noise coming from outside in the house. My mom didn't wake up, only my dad. Suddenly he heard the doorknob getting opened, and the door started slowly opening. My father was staring at the door, and he was terrified to see what looked like the Archangel of Death standing in the open door. My father explained that he was tall, thin, and muscular, and having a pair of black feathered wings. He had a hood and a pale skin, along with jet black eyes and hair, and he held a large scythe in his hand and had a large cloak covering his thin body. He started staring at my father for a few seconds. My father went from being absolutely terrified to curious and then to confused. My father finally asked him, "What do you want? Why are you here?" However, the angel didn't respond. He just kept staring at my father. Finally, my father got to the point and asked, "Is my mother going to die?" Death closed his eyes and lowered his head, showing sadness and desperation. He slowly left the room and closed the door, leaving my father standing alone. The next morning, my father went to church near our house, and he told the priest about the vision and the encounter with the angel. The priest got absolutely terrified and told my father that the angel is called Azrael and is the Archangel of Death. A few days later, my grandmother took the surgery, and it wasn't successful. It was unsuccessful, and she died a few days after the surgery. My father remembered Azrael and the sadness that he showed when my father asked him. Nowadays, we live in Albania, and my dad still tells the story every time that I ask him about grandmother. It terrifies me when I think that I have stood in the same room with death long ago, and that my father actually spoke to him. I haven't been in that room for a long time, perhaps 10 years, and I'm afraid to go there. I have been back many times in Greece, but never went to that room again. I'm just too absolutely afraid that I might meet Azrael personally. Although, I guess we will all meet him someday. So a very cool story. I really love that. It's very powerful. Now, that's not a story necessarily of intervention, but it is a story of sending a message, of giving this family a chance to brace for, you know, what would be a painful event. Whenever somebody's teetering on that edge of life and death, it's a horribly desperate time full of hope and yearning and want and pleading. And so perhaps that was the miracle, was that it wasn't a surprise. They were told, you know, that she's coming home. She's going to come home and it's okay. So I don't know. I hope that, you know, as powerful as that vision is, I hope that it was a healing thing for him in retrospect as he looked back, because I mean, how many people does death visit without bringing them home? So just a thought, but I think it's a very powerful story, and I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I did. I love that story. The next one, I normally don't get up too early, but there was a huge thunderstorm going around at 3 a.m. in the morning, and it sounded like there was an absolutely just like a war going on outside. The thunder pounded against my walls and the lightning lit up my room enough for me to see everything without any trouble. So, since I was awake, I decided to ride my bike to the gymnasium for an early workout. After I was done, there, I rode home, which was the absolute worst ride I've ever had. The lightning was striking everywhere and flashing across the sky like missiles being shot from the heavens. And there was thunder roaring as loud as jets flying low. And the winds blew so hard I almost fell off my bicycle multiple times. I was really scared. As I reached my apartment complex, I noticed that every single gate was closed and locked. At this moment, I was panicking. I rode around the entire complex about 3 times, and the lightning bolt struck the road far behind me. And I knew this storm was serious, so I needed to get inside fast. I couldn't jump the fence because, first, it's a high elevation, and second, they're metal, and thirdly, I was really sore from working out. And after 3 times riding around, a broken lamp next to the gate lit up like a star. And as I rode to it, the gate slightly opened like nothing. I went inside and looked everywhere and didn't see anybody. I don't know what I was thinking, but I said, "Thank you so much." And the lamp suddenly turned off and the gate slammed behind me. Was this a ghost helping me or a coincidence? I think the fact that it responded and then shut the gate behind you is a pretty good indicator that it was some kind of intelligence. Now, is that a situation where there's just some spiritual presence that's just trying to help? And again, we get to that discussion, is everything an angel? Well, maybe. Maybe it was actually an angel. Maybe it was this person's guardian angel just saying, "Here, get inside. I got this." Or maybe it was just some spirit that happened to be lingering in that area, saw him struggling to get safety, and decided to help. I don't know. And nobody does know. It's just a discussion. And that one was nice and short, so that wasn't too bad. This next one is a medium-sized story, but okay, this is coming out of the Philippines. So I hope sometimes when I read these stories from abroad, they're tough because they sometimes include cultural references that are really tricky, and if you don't know the culture, sometimes it doesn't make a lot of sense. But I'll read it anyway. We'll see what it says. Let's see. Okay. I'm trying to figure out. I was working on a graveyard shift at a call center, and I usually sleep on my breaks, since if we do 11-hour shifts, we get 2-hour breaks. Now, the mail quarters is not exactly the place that I'd go and sleep, since the place reeks with foul smell, and that mail is spelled M-A-L-E, not M-A-I-L. So it's talking about a men's room. It's a foul smell of feet or snoring men. I usually sleep on the production floor, but since we had foreign visitors that day, sleeping on the floor was out of the question, so I had to bear with the order. And to give you a brief idea of the sleeping quarters, it has 8 double-deck beds, a bathroom, and it also has air conditioning and 2 wall-sized windows to keep the smell moving. I took a spot on the second deck on the far end of the room, near the window, and as I dozed off, I could vividly hear people as they moved about to enter and leave the quarters, and also to use the lavatory since the door is really noisy as it opens and closes. And now while I slept, I suddenly felt cold. And so I tried to reposition myself by curling up, but suddenly I froze, and I had difficulty breathing. I had experienced sleep paralysis before, but this time I was awake. I know I was awake since my eyes were open, and I could see the light coming out of the window from the lavatory, and I was able to move my head. As I tried to snap out of it, I tried to look around to see if someone could help. As I looked around, I suddenly saw the head of an old man on the ledge of my bed with white hair looking at me, and he was smiling. Then it got worse, and I couldn't move or even breathe at all, and I just laid there and tried to pray and invoke the name of God to get it off of me, but I was finding it really difficult. I was about to give up when suddenly I felt a child's hand pull my left hand, yanking me up, and only then was I able to breathe again and move. I got up, breathed in a bunch of the foul air, and got the hell out of that room. But before I left the room, I knew who saved me, and I thanked her before I bolted out the door. So he's equating this a little girl spirit that's rumored to haunt this place as his angel. And granted, it could be. I mean, I think the term angel just is, you know, how many times have you called somebody that was really kind to you, oh, you're an angel? I mean, it's a term. Sometimes people are angels. Sometimes animals are angels, like your dog. And just making you feel better when you're in pain or, you know, sad. You know, animals can be angelic in that way. So perhaps we're all angels. All right, the next one is, this one's coming out of the U.S., so this one should be pretty easy to read. Not too overly long, but this may be the last one. I don't know. Let's see how much. Yeah, maybe we'll see how it goes here. I lived in a white building that was made into apartments, and they were fairly large apartments from what I can remember, and I remember it very clearly. It had two large apartments on the ground floor, and I lived on the ground floor, and three large apartments on the top floor. And there was a police station to the right-hand side of it. If your back is facing the building, the Hanover College is literally right down the street from it, and this is coming out of Indiana. The police parking lot and the apartment parking lot was just one shared parking area. A driveway-like thing led from the road in front of the police station to behind it, all the way to behind my apartment building on the side that had the Hanover College down the street, on the left-hand side. The police station had a small hill, which the driveway was on, that I would ride my bike down, which all you had to do is make a small right turn, and you'd be behind the police station and behind the parking lot and my apartment. One day I was riding my bike near the end of the driveway, and I lost control. The bike was going down, but I felt hands under both of my arms. I felt like I was being picked up by someone, and this someone was really tall. I felt the air go past me as I was being lifted off my bike, and I felt like I was picked up pretty high. No part of me touched the ground until I was set right on my feet, with my bike lying on the ground a foot or two beside me. Thinking back on it now, I realized had I stayed on my bike, my head would have hit the concrete hard. I never wore a helmet, so I would have been really hurt, or could have died from a head injury. I was really scared about what had happened at that time. But now I'm really thankful for whatever had happened. I always just thought it was my guardian angel saving me. I've always been pretty well protected. When I was a baby, I was hooked up to a lot of machines and a lot was wrong with me, and doctors said I wouldn't live to be a year. And there were many times when I stopped breathing on my own. And they said I'd never be able to walk. I can do that. And they said I'd never be able to feed myself. And I can do that. I can do everything they said I wouldn't be able to do. And they even said I'd be mentally retarded and I'm perfectly normal. I was going mostly downhill until my mom prayed for me one night when I stopped breathing. And ever since then, I've been just fine. And doctors said they couldn't believe I was the same baby they'd seen just a few months ago. So it sounds like he's had somebody with him the whole ride. That whole journey, somebody's been helping him, and that's really cool. And that can be ancestral as well. Our ancestral spirits can be angels to us. There's many accounts that people say that their, you know, beloved grandparent watches over them, and so they become angels. I think that we all have, and perhaps a lot of times we don't even know we've bumped into angels. Maybe we don't know that they were right there, and maybe they look like everyone else. Maybe they were just there and gave us a smile on a day we really needed it, or maybe it was that stranger you bumped into when you had all the problems, and they had the best advice, and it turned things around for you. So who knows? Who knows what forms angels will take? And, you know, I just like to believe that they're always around us. I like to believe that anyway. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're not. But I think it's pretty cool to believe that. And the alternative is to not believe it, and then what? It feels a little cold and lonely. So having a belief like that, I think, is a constructive thing. And again, energy follows intention, right? So if you believe you are protected, then you are protected. Even if you're manifesting that yourself, you are protecting yourself. Maybe you are your own angel if you have enough faith. A few months before my father passed away, he told my mother that his own dead mother, had come to visit him. He explained to my mom that she looked so real and that for a few minutes, he forgot that she was gone and asked her what she was doing there and how she got there. He said my grandma told him that she was there for him and that everything was going to be okay. He said she told him, "I'm here now. I'll take care of you. Everything's going to be okay." Realization hit him that he was talking to his dead mother, so he closed his eyes, took a few deep breaths, and when he opened his eyes again, she was gone. My mom reassured him that everything had been a dream, and my dad had recently had one of his legs amputated, so she chalked this up to him being depressed and imagining things. A few days after, my mom was assisting my dad out of bed because he needed to go to the restroom, and she noticed that the rug next to his bed had gotten tangled up on the wheelchair, so she kicked it out of the way and wheeled my dad out of the room. She said she decided that while my dad was in the restroom, she would come back and straighten up the room and change the sheets and open the curtains and let in some light, etc. So she left my dad in the restroom and grabbed clean sheets and went in the bathroom to clean it up, or in the bedroom to clean it up. And what she saw next made her heart plunge to her stomach. She says that the rug had been straightened out and was neatly laid out next to the bed, and the bed had been made and the curtains had been pulled back, and she completely freaked out and ran from the room, and she asked my dad where she and my dad were only supposed to be the only ones in the house at that time. The next morning, my mom walked into the bedroom to see if Dad was up and was ready for breakfast. My dad was just waking up and in that state between sleep and wake when he mumbled, "She didn't mean to scare you, she just wants to help." He didn't remember saying that when asked about it later. Another time, my dad told my mom that his deceased mom and brother had come to visit him and told him not to be afraid, and they were going to be with him when it was time. My dad passed away 2 days later. And those are really cool. I mean, that's the way to go, because if it's going to happen, I mean, having those loved ones close by is, and helping you with that transition has got to be so amazingly important and really cool. I hope when my time comes that the, you know, those people that love me that are on the other side are there to, you know, help me get home. I think that'll be epic. But, you know, not that I'm in any hurry, mind you, but you know what I'm saying. If you got to take that journey, I think it's really cool. And I think that those kind of things maybe happen more than we realize, that, you know, people do see some, oftentimes, you know, someone, loved one, checking up on them. I don't think my dad had any experiences like that. I really wish he would have. And if he did, he didn't talk about it. But my dad was a real stoic man as well. So, I mean, he wouldn't be... when I went home, one of the last times I saw him, he was asking what I was up to. And so I was telling him about the show. And my dad is just not into the paranormal at all. He couldn't have cared less. He would have rather watched a hand towel dry in the sun than listen to what I had to say. But I was explaining to him about the show and some of my experiences, and his eyes just got that glazed over look like, oh God. funny. So, you know, but again, I did have a dream of him after he passed, and it was a really cool dream, and it was very, very real. So I'm pretty sure that he did visit, and I think that's a really healing thing, and very, as Don says, cathartic. I like that word, cathartic. So, I think that if you're going to make that transition, having those loved ones close and letting you know that they're there and they're going to be there and they're going to help you has got to take a lot of the worry out of it. Because, you know, I don't think that I'm afraid to die. I really don't. I don't believe I have been for a very, very, very long time. But what I'm afraid of is what I leave behind. You know, for me, that's my own personal thing. It's like, what am I leaving behind? So if tomorrow my time was up, what would I be leaving for my youngest child and my wife and, you know, my other two children? It's like, so that's one of the things that really keeps me motivated in you know, helping to develop the portal, because I want to leave them some kind of legacy. I think that'd be cool. But I think that's the fearful part for me is have I done enough during my time to make sure that everyone is okay? But, you know, it's each his own. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on tonight's show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please feel free to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/paranormalportalradio, as well as finding us on Twitter. We're on Twitter at Paranormal Portal, P-O-R-T-L. And we'd love to have you stop by our YouTube page and subscribe and check out our shows there. We got hundreds of shows in our vault of journeys into the paranormal portal. So I hope you'll check it out, guys. We're over there at youtube.com/paranormalportal. So hope to see you guys soon. We'll be back, of course, for more podcasts in the coming days. So stay tuned. But we love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day and remember to laugh as much as you can. Take care, everybody.
betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today Magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.